On WMUK, it's 7 minutes after 10. I'm Cara Lawrence. On Friday night at 7 p.m., the musicians of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra will gather to perform outdoors in a concert that will benefit Loaves and Fishes of Kalamazoo, and I have some friends here to talk about it. Conducting the concert is Andrew Kohler. Welcome to WMUK again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Could you describe the event for us?
Sure. Okay. Well, it's an outdoor concert. We're celebrating the season. We're celebrating summer. We're going to take a little trip around the world. You know, that's something that I think a lot of us like to do in summer. I'm often afforded the opportunity to do so and really relish it every time I can go. So I thought music is a great way to transport us to all kinds of different places. So let's use it as a chance to do a little traveling in just about an hour and 15 minutes or so. So we start with some music in America. We end with some music in America. And along the way, we traipse around Europe for a little while. We stop in France. We go to Vienna, Austria. And then we make our way as far west as Russia and then turn around, hit Romania and Italy on the way back and have some fantastic guests from within the orchestra and without the orchestra along the way.
This concert is a little bit of a surprise. We haven't seen the KSO play outdoors in quite a while. And I think it's safe to say the story behind this is the musicians of the KSO wanted to create a positive experience for themselves and for, of course, people coming out to listen to music during a difficult time in the last few months. If you look at the news, you'll see stories on WMUK and other publications that there was a contract negotiation that broke down and then has since been resolved. But in the meantime, maybe Julie Evans Little here, you can tell us about this effort to bring people back together again and also benefit a local charity.
Yes, thanks so much. So in addition to Loaves and Fishes, we also have asked Gospel Mission if we could include them as well in this benefit. It's one way that the musicians can reach out into the community and offer their support, in addition to, of course, our music that we offer, which is very special for us. May I list the things that people may want to contribute when they come to our concert? For Loaves and Fishes, actually August is Dry Pasta Month, so that contribution would be wonderful, in addition to any canned protein like tuna or chicken, peanut butter, high protein stews or soups, some canned vegetables or fruit, healthy kids snacks like granola bars or raisins. Of course, monetary gifts are always wonderful, and for Loaves and Fishes, a donation of $1 actually equals 3 meals. So that's wonderful for them. For the Gospel Mission, again, they would so welcome monetary gifts, but as well coffee and 10-pound bags of rice, canned vegetables, pasta, canned fruit, salt and pepper, sugar, things like that.
Julie, you're principal second violin?
Assistant principal second.
And in the orchestra, but are you also a member of the Loaves and Fishes or Gospel Mission organizations?
My husband and I always contribute several times a year, actually, to these organizations. I think they're such an important part of our community.
And you also work at Western Michigan University.
I do. I teach in the School of Music. I teach in the music theory department, mainly oral skills classes, which most students struggle with a bit, but very important classes. It revolves around ear training and
right.
sight singing.
When I went to Western, we used numbers instead of do, re, mi, or solfege.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Is that still the...
I try to convince my students that solfege has a very important part to play in their training. I win some of them over, not all.
Okay. This goes to show are you a typical KSO local musician bringing together, you have many hats to wear?
I do. Actually, most of our musicians wear many hats. There are a handful of us who teach in the School of Music at Western and also play in Kalamazoo Symphony. But many of our musicians are piecing together a life, doing many, either playing in many different orchestras and or teaching as well, have a private studio. So it's a challenge for sure.
David, could you also describe how you bring not only your skills to the KSO, but to other areas of musical life in West Michigan?
Well, the players of the symphony not only play just in the symphony of Kalamazoo, but like Julie was saying, they play across the state and across the region. A lot of our players come from Chicago and Indiana and Ohio. Is not uncommon for that as well. But they're also, as well, a very integrated part of the community. Like Julie said, you know, some of them are teachers at the university, also instructors at Kalamazoo College. They are teachers in the public schools, and various other fields. I can't even begin to list all of the other professions that the musicians do to put together a life that allows them to play and contribute to the musical community through the Kalamazoo Symphony.
Mm-hmm. Now, that means you all have to be ready to put on or go on stage with something prepared and ready to go, and sometimes a short amount of time. Andrew, and this concert, of course, there's not a lot of time to rehearse, but having worked in the orchestra and with the orchestra before, Andrew, what can you say about the quality of playing and the ability of these musicians to get the show together really quickly?
I mean, I think these musicians are the lifeblood of music making in Kalamazoo. And that's why I feel so strongly. I mean, I sometimes play in the symphony myself, but really the reason I'm here conducting is I was asked, and I'm certainly honored to be asked, but also I really consider these all my colleagues and friends. We do so many different things together. And when, as you mentioned, contract negotiations broke down, it seemed like maybe we had reached a point where the management had lost sight that these musicians are so central to the musical and just cultural life of Kalamazoo. So I think a lot of members of the community really banded together to make the case that, you know, these voices you've just heard, David Peshlakai and Julie Little, these are people who are essential to music making in Kalamazoo, and they're great musicians, to get to your other point. So yeah, we've, you know, the musicians themselves are putting on this concert, which is a huge and very difficult task. They're doing everything from soup to nuts, you know, from figuring out what church might be able to allow us to use their bathrooms for the public at the concert, to how do we get the music to do this, to can we figure out a way to raise some money so that we can make sure that we have proper sound engineering at the concert, all those incredible details to put on the concert. And they're doing it all because they want to get back to this tradition of making free concerts in the park and being this central part of the community in the way that this is also functioning as a fundraiser for Loaves and Fishes and the Gospel Mission.
I do feel compelled to mention that the management of KSO has fully endorsed this effort, this concert on Friday night, and of course the cause for which you are coming together to perform. It starts at 7 p.m. on Friday at Bronson Park downtown. As I saw the program, you and I, Andrew, talk about programming a lot because you have truly different ideas. You really want to make connections often that surprise listeners and surprise even the musicians. However, I looked at the program and I went, ah, he gave us a classic summer concert out of the 1940s or something. I mean, it is pure oral pleasure.
Well, I'd like to think that the other things I program are not oral pleasure. But yeah, you bet. I mean, you know, look, we're in an outdoor concert. This is celebrating the summer. We're meant to have a lot of fun, you know. So as soon as you go outdoors already, you have to think, all right, these need to be things that translate well to the great outdoors, right? I mean, we're not going to have maybe necessarily the range of acoustical subtlety that we could have inside a hall. So that's part of it. And the other thing is that, you know, this is just a time to have a lot of fun. This is a real celebration because things are finally turning around with the contract negotiations. We look like we're headed in a positive place. So we wanted to celebrate that and to celebrate this moment. So yeah, you're right. It is things that the audience will readily recognize and love. Things like the William Tell Overture when we stop off in Italy.
Arthur Fiedler would have enjoyed this, would have signed off on this.
Well, I'm honored. I think those are great concerts. There is a place to have that kind of fun. And you know, the thing is, it's all really good music. So I feel compelled to point out that it's not, I feel strongly that it's in no way pandering. This is all really well written, great music for orchestra. It just happens to be a little bit on the shorter and lighter and funner side.
Sure. But you didn't go out of your way. So you have a Hungarian dance by Brahms. You didn't try to go find an obscure orchestral dance by Schnickelbacher.
I was very close to programming something by Nielsen, and I did want to do a Chinese overture, but the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians Committee steered me in the right direction and made sure that I slimmed things down and kept to the big hits. I did manage to at least sneak in the Romanian Rhapsody by Enescu, which is somewhat less frequently played than some of the others. So we get a little bit of a, you know, in we stop off in France and Austria and Russia and Italy, but at least we have a little time to stop off in a lesser visited country, Romania.
Why don't we get started with the piece that begins the program? It's the Bernstein Overture to Candide, which will really challenge the players as they get started. Here's a live performance, James Levine and the New York Philharmonic at a concert for life back in the 80s. That could be you in the audience on Friday at Bronson Park when the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians take the stage, led by my guest, Andrew Kohler. Also here with me today, David Peschlakai and Julie Evans-Little, both Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians and members of the KSO. Although this is under the aegis of this group of Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians and organized by them. Music starts at 7 p.m. It's a free concert in Bronson Park, and it benefits Loaves and Fishes and the Gospel Mission. There are many items that Julie listed. Maybe we'll hear that again later in the hour that you can bring along to the concert that would make a difference. So starting off with the Overture to Candide by Leonard Bernstein. That's actually not an easy overture.
It is not easy at all, no. But these are great musicians, as you pointed out earlier in the hour. So though a few of them looked at me a bit askance when they saw the repertoire list, I think it's going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. We're going to sound great.
Let's talk about some of the featured soloists that are going to appear on Friday night.
Yeah, we have some really wonderful guests. Two of them are coming from within the orchestra. Obviously, this is in many ways a celebration of the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians, and so we wanted to highlight a few of those. And one of them, we'll mention a little later on, is coming from outside the orchestra, sort of a hometown musical hero who is an ally of the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians. So the first one we'll hear, the first one in the soloist role that we'll hear, is the associate concertmaster, Julia Stolte-Neckermann. And with her, we decided we might perform the beautiful Meditation from Thais, an opera written by the French composer Jules Massenet. And this comes from a really sort of important moment in the opera where the character is considering a kind of religious conversion, basically. I mean, she really takes stock of her life and decides to turn it around. And sort of amazingly, in the context of this opera, it's not sung. It is, in fact, written originally for a violin solo. So it's just what's going on in this character's head. It's one of the most famous and justly beloved works for solo violin, and that's what Julia is going to play with us.
So when I saw that at the movie theater, Renee Fleming didn't sing this melody? I changed the memory so that she must have sung it. But
I mean, I suppose it's possible that she might have sung the violin line. But as far as I know, the original is for violin in the opera. Yeah.
Well, what a special moment. And this has been a favorite for a very long time, ever since the opera was produced, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We have a recording to hear of the meditation from Thais, Lila Josefowitz, and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Would anybody else like to chime in on their colleague, Julie Neckerman, and working? She's, how long, roughly, has she been part of the KSO? David?
I've had the pleasure of working with Julie in the string quartet. She's also the first violinist in the quartet. I've been there 12 years, and I know she's been there longer than that. I want to say she's been with the orchestra for about 15 years now. And her musicianship is just out of this world. The sound is just like liquid gold to the ear. It's just fantastic. You know, she rarely plays a harsh tone. Everything is just exquisitely shaped and phrased, and you know, the nuances are just amazing. So Thais, when I saw her playing this on the program, I was thrilled because it's a perfect vehicle for her musical voice.
What are some of her activities outside being an orchestral musician?
Well, as a member of the string quartet, she is one of the full-time members of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. There are 8 musicians who are full-time members, so that keeps her fairly busy. She has a son that also keeps her fairly busy as well with his activities. I don't think there's too many other activities that she does outside of the actual Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. But she does play around with various other orchestras I do know of from time to time.
Well, it's interesting getting to know all of the members. I was thinking baseball cards someday would be a neat thing to give out so that we can keep track of all the faces in the orchestra.
We actually had baseball cards when I was with the Kalamazoo, or I'm sorry, with the Grand Rapids Symphony.
Really?
As part of our education program, yes.
Wow. Also,
it was a fun little thing.
The concert of the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians is this Friday at 7 p.m. in Bronson Park. Arrive with some dry goods for the Loaves and Fishes Food Bank, and free will donations will be accepted for the gospel mission. This will, of course, depend on how many people come to the program. How is the weather looking for Friday? Julie's giving a thumbs up.
Everything's looking great. And even though we're playing the William Tell Overture, which has a storm episode in it, we're hoping that is going to be purely musical evocation and that will no way encourage any kind of real life storms. So it's looking great. In the event that something does happen, we do have a rain location, which is Kalamazoo College, Dalton Theater at Kalamazoo College. So people can check the Facebook event page. I'm sure it'll be posted there. And just kind of keep an ear out. And if we need to move, we can. We have a rain venue, so the show will go on no matter what. But we're very hopeful that everything will be beautiful outside and we'll be able to enjoy this great summer weather.
Well, here's a recording of the meditation from Thais, which will be a singular moment for one of the longtime members of the Kalamazoo Symphony, Julia Neckerman. The meditation from Thais by Jules Massenet, and that was Lila Josefowitz in the recording. The outstanding musical colleague of my guests, Julia Neckerman, will appear on Friday to perform that with her fellow Kalamazoo Symphonic musicians. Andrew, is that a case where you simply set the tempo and walk away, or do you need to keep track of things?
I don't even really set the tempo. I just sort of wait for Julia to play, and then we just all hang on whatever she does.
Nice.
I have even less to do than that.
So some of these pieces do naturally play themselves as they are sort of genetically inside orchestral musicians?
I think so. And, you know, I think, I mean, it certainly an orchestra of this quality can get to know even very difficult, very subtle music and kind of get it in their bones. But there are some pieces, and I think this is one of them, that just feels so natural. I mean, as long as you've got good musical sense, you know, and you kind of have an instinctive understanding of where to breathe and how to move a line, which I think musicians, again, of this quality will, then this is truly one of the great joys, a piece like this, because it does, in many ways, I mean, one has to train for a long time to get to that point, but once you're there, it kind of can play itself.
Anne Harrigan, the conductor of the Battle Creek Symphony, has spoken about the influx of Eastern European string players in the Battle Creek Symphony and says, you know, with Gregory Maytan and others, that sometimes she gets an interesting flavor from when they program certain pieces. Tchaikovsky has a certain way of coming off in a special way.
There is definitely, I heard it once beautifully put by Daniel Barenboim, that any orchestra, good orchestra in the world, can play anyone's music, but it is possible that they might play another music with a kind of accent. And so to reverse that, you know, when you might hear, say, the Russian School of Violin playing take on Russian music, then yes, maybe you're hearing Tchaikovsky without anything like an accent. You know, it's really the native tongue. And I think that's true because I once did Copland in Ukraine and found that that went well because those were good musicians, but it was also a little bit of an uphill battle. And there was some more talking and training and working on how to get that particular sound.
Julie, I wonder, since how carefully do you listen to Julia during a performance as the assistant second principal second violin? Do your lines often have to coincide? And are you able to predict?
Every moment I will listen to Julia and watch as well, because her body language will give us information too as we're performing. In a sense, we shouldn't have to need Andrew at all, because we should be connecting so well to what Julia is feeling and expressing and anticipating what she may do, the time she may take in a phrase or the crescendo or decrescendo, and be able to support that behind her.
Do you ever take it for granted because you know her playing so well?
No, because I think every performance is very different. You know, that's the wonderful thing about live music, is that we can play the same piece over and over, and each time it will be very unique because we are human beings. We rarely can do the same thing twice exactly the same way.
Are you ever surprised?
Surprised with the differences?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I try to stay open-minded enough to know that almost anything can happen in a live performance, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. The musicians often look like they're deadly serious. Why is it that orchestral musicians don't play with big grins on their faces as opposed to, I don't know, jazz or rock or something
sure.
like that?
That's a good question. A lot. I've had a lot of students ask me that question as well. And David is moving up to the mic here to share something too. I think that it takes such great focus to, when you're in a large ensemble like this or even a smaller one, to really think about all the things that are happening. There are so many instructions in the music itself, dynamics and articulation, and where, as a string player, where am I playing this on my bow to get a certain effect? And I think it's so much multitasking that it's, for a split second, if I lose my concentration and focus by doing something like smiling or thinking about something else, something can go wrong that doesn't feel very good. So it is, I do hope audience members understand that it's not that we're being so boring or not interacting with them enough, but it's a pretty intense experience, and it does take a tremendous amount of focus to make sure that we are connecting so well with all of our colleagues around us to create this beautiful sound that we're trying to communicate.
David?
Just reiterating exactly what Julie said. The concentration is so intense and so high that it's actually the opposite. It looks like we're bored, but we're actually so engaged with what we're doing that something like, you know, a facial muscle of smiling is almost too difficult to do because of all the multitasking that's involved in reading someone's body language and figuring out how your instrument is going to respond to someone else's input and line that they've created. So it's not in our training as well as much because we are so focused on the instrument itself and the musical line that's one of the things that just sort of gets lost a little bit, which is a little unfortunate for our audience on some respect, but hopefully their ears end up reaping the benefits.
Well, maybe Andrew will bring an extra long baton and turn around and smile and conduct the audience.
Well, Julie's just pointed out that I'm totally unnecessary anyway. So I can just be the one who's dancing there and providing all the visual excitement for the audience.
All right. Well, let's hear another one that plays itself. How about the Hungarian dance number 5?
That's right. So, of course, you know, Brahms was of German origin, lived most of his life in Vienna, and Vienna was part of a twin monarchy with Hungary. Brahms was really sort of dazzled by this Hungarian violinist's playing, and he wrote this series of short piano pieces based on Hungarian folk music, and he called these his Hungarian dances. They were so incredibly successful that it basically made his career. He could do whatever he wanted after that. He never had to take really a serious teaching job. He could just write the music he wanted because he just kept getting royalties from these the Hungarian dances. And several of them were, of course, orchestrated. He did 3 of them himself, not this one. And then another composer named Parlo happened to orchestrate this one. It's a well-known tune and for good reason, and it's a lot of fun.
The Hungarian Dance Number 5 of Johannes Brahms. We're talking about the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians program for Friday at 7 p.m. in Bronson Park. My guests are Andrew Kohler, conductor, who will be leading this program, cellist David Peshlakai, and Julie Evans-Little, who are both members of the KSO and part of the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians who brought this program together. Julie, perhaps once again you can talk about who this benefits and how those people who are listening who might want to participate can join in and help on Friday.
Sure. We have 2 organizations that we're very, very happy to feature as our as part of this benefit concert, Loaves and Fishes and the Kalamazoo Gospel Mission. And it's wonderful to have the opportunity to reach into the community and offer our support. And we hope that our audience members will be very generous when they come to hear us on Friday night. So just a couple of things that Loaves and Fishes mentioned that would be very helpful to them, in addition, of course, always to monetary gifts. Canned protein like tuna and chicken, peanut butter, canned vegetables and fruit, some healthy kid snacks like granola bars and raisins. For Kalamazoo Gospel Mission, as well, canned vegetables, fruit, pasta, of course. Everyone loves pasta. Also, bags of rice for the Gospel Mission, coffee, sugar, and again, monetary support would always be welcome.
All right. Again, that's at 7 o'clock Friday, and so far the forecast looks very positive. Beautiful weather for Friday, and that'll be downtown in Bronson Park. Let's pivot to another guest featured on this concert. Who else is invited?
Well, so after we hear the Bronx-Hungarian Dance and we spend some time in Vienna / Budapest, we move our way farther west and we go to Russia. And we'll hear two pieces there. And one of them is a concert etude for trumpet. And that's going to feature our principal trumpet player, Scott Thornburg, who's also a professor here at Western, terrific musician. And it was not only did he suggest playing this piece, which he knows so well and shows off his virtuosic ability, but he even offered to get the parts for the orchestra, which was very generous indeed. And it's just a great 3-minute showpiece really puts all the various techniques that the trumpet can use to show off to good effect.
It's amazing how often Scott Thornburg's name comes up when members of the orchestra are talking about other members of the group that they really admire. And
I mean, it's an orchestra of superstars, and he's certainly one of those leading lights among them. And I asked all the artists in residence if they were interested in doing solos, because I wanted to feature as many as we could, which of course was also limited by program length, so it couldn't be all of them. But he was one of the first to respond, and I was immediately excited by the opportunity to get him on there on stage. Now, of course, I'm going to make his life quite difficult, because right after that, we do the Procession of the Nobles by Rimsky-Korsakov, which starts with a big trumpet fanfare. So he's going to have about 10 seconds to run from the front of the stage all the way to the back and then start playing that fanfare. So he's a man much in demand.
These are some of the considerations that, as listeners, we don't really think of. But there are physical demands on all members of the orchestra. There have been lawsuits in the past where, because the string section plays so many more actual notes, you know, than woodwinds and brass, that it's been argued that they should be paid higher wages.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have no brass players here to
defend themselves.
Yeah.
Well, as a conductor, I have to stay sort of in the middle of all this, right? Neutral. But I will say that brass players also have, in the short term especially, very physically taxing instruments, right? I mean, it's very difficult to play brass instruments and sustain that level of sound, even if they have somewhat fewer notes than we do.
Mm-hmm. Let us move on to another soloist. This one you won't find in the ranks of the orchestra.
That's right. This is the guest that I was alluding to earlier, and one of the homegrown heroes of Kalamazoo. I mean, to read her bio is really dazzling. She has sung on all the great operatic stages of the world and worked with all the great operatic conductors of the world. And she's back here in Kalamazoo and an ally of the Kalamazoo Symphonic Musicians and wanted to support us. And so this is, of course, Susan B. Anthony. And we're delighted that she's going to be singing two wonderful Puccini arias, that master melodist, that great operatic composer. She'll sing the O Mio Babbino Caro from Gianni Schicchi, which I think, even if not by name, will be well known to many listeners. And the equally famous Musetta's Waltz from La Bohème.
Why don't we hear O Mio Babbino Caro?
That sounds wonderful.
This is from an opera that we don't see very often.
Yeah, it's part of a series of one-act operas, and it doesn't get performed as often on its own, Gianni Schicchi, even though it's really wonderful and very funny. But this one aria is frequently excerpted and very well known, and as your listeners will soon realize, for good reason.
What a beautiful melody, O Mio Babbino Caro by Puccini. Susan B. Anthony has offered her services for this concert. In fact, all of the musicians are donating their performance on Friday night, a performance called the Starlight Concert at Bronson Park. Andrew Kohler, thank you so much for coming in to talk with me about this concert and tell listeners about the program.
Always my pleasure.
And Julie, thanks for telling us more about the partnership with Kalamazoo Loaves and Fishes and the Gospel Mission.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you looking forward to performing on Friday?
Very much so, and I hope many, many people will show up and just enjoy the experience.
When is the last time you performed outside as part of the KSO?
I think it's been about 6 years.
So I know that can present problems here and there because be playing outside, you know, there's always the danger of rain and things like that.
Sure.
But is there something you really like about offering an outdoor program?
It's just beautiful being in the outdoors, in nature, and looking out and seeing people having a picnic and children running around, and it's just a beautiful setting.
David, thanks for joining us, and would you recommend people bring blankets or some chairs, things like
that? Blankets would be good, yeah. Whatever you want to do to have a good time outdoors, listening to music and or conversing with your friends and family, just come and have a good time.
Finally, back to you, Andrew. Would you leave us with the hoedown here?
Yeah, that's right. So we've made our trip through Europe, stopped in all kinds of beautiful places along the way, and one of the nicest parts of traveling is always coming home, isn't it? So we're back to the good old USA, and in this case, the Southwest, enjoying a good old-fashioned hoedown, as written by sort of skinny Brooklyn composer Aaron Copland.